Hello, my name is William Cueto, and welcome to Builders of Hope, a show about young Catholic professionals who are living out their faith in all aspects of their lives, their family lives, their social lives, and their careers. Growing in the spiritual life is not just for priests and nuns. It's for all of us, as you will see through the lives of our guests who are striving to live out their faith and build a better world. Today's guest is Ralph DeCardenas. Ralph will share with us his experiences regarding his participation with a large group of engineers who got together to determine how best to help society as a group and a volunteer project.
When I graduated from high school, I applied to several universities that were in the state, and I applied to Georgia Tech as well. I was graced by being accepted to Georgia Tech. I was pretty much a hard worker from the beginning. I guess that's also a gift. And I got accepted to Georgia Tech. While at Tech, I was in a co-op program where I got to work and gain some experience in my career, which was mechanical engineering.
Where did you do that at?
I worked at NASA in Johnson Space Center, Houston, Texas. And it was a fantastic job. I really loved the place.
Wow.
The work was exactly what I wanted to do. The only problem was it was in Houston, Texas, and not close to my family in Miami. By luck, having gone to a career fair, I ran into someone from Motorola, which was in Boynton Beach, Florida, and had the opportunity. When I found out they gave me an offer to be a co-op there, I said, well, I thought about it. I really loved my job in Houston, but it wasn't close to my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I just made the decision from there to go to Motorola, and that's where I ended my co-op career. I graduated from Georgia Tech in 97 with my bachelor's in mechanical engineering, and I began working for Motorola full-time. I also received a fellowship from Georgia Tech right when I graduated, and I decided to defer that. A couple of reasons were I was away from my family for, it had been like 4 years, 4.5 years already. Gave me a chance to kind of be with them a little longer, grab a little more experience as a full-time engineer.
Sure.
And it was great because it gave me a chance to be in Miami, the place where I was raised and born, and I pretty much chose to go back to Miami.
You did that for about a year?
For about a year and a half.
What did you do after that?
After about a year and a half, I decided to take up my fellowship and go to graduate school. Ended up going back to Georgia Tech, and about a year later, I had my master's degree. And I recently graduated in about May of this year, and began working full-time over in Melbourne, Florida, for an engineering company there. And I'm doing structural analysis work as a mechanical engineer. It's very challenging. I love my job. It's a job where I love, I don't mind staying a little bit later each day because it's something I really love doing. And
we'll come back to that in a second.
Sure.
To your career. I want to know a little bit more about that. But there's something I know about you, and that is a decision that you made in choosing your school of choice for your master's in engineering. You said you had this fellowship with Georgia Tech that you deferred, and you ended up following through with and getting your master's at Georgia Tech. But you also got an offer from MIT, correct?
Yes, I did.
Tell us a little bit about that.
The fellowship was really, it's from a consortium, and it could have been used at any school. So I just had to pretty much get accepted into a graduate program and attend the school, get accepted and attend and apply the fellowship to that. So I would have been covered, anywhere, pretty much anywhere I wanted to go. The reason one of the schools I got accepted to was MIT as well as Georgia Tech. And in engineering, MIT is considered one of the better schools in the country. And I had attended a retreat a couple weeks right before I needed to make my decision. And the retreat was exactly what I needed at that point. It gave me a couple of days to really focus not only things within myself, but my relationship with God and things like that. From that retreat, I decided not to go with MIT.
Why is that?
And I had a couple good reasons for that. One of my most important reasons, which really came into the whole retreat and what I was thinking and really focusing in and reflecting on at the time, was my formation and my growth, my spiritual growth. The major issue, I'm part of a group, a Marian community, you could say, of young men that are striving to learn and grow in their formation, in their spiritual lives, among other things, and in their profession as well. Basically, there are certain houses. This isn't a group that's everywhere in the United States. I actually began at school in Atlanta, and when I came down to Miami, that was part of the reason also for coming to Miami was there was another house of this group there. and I was able to attend there, which I did throughout the year and a half. The reason why, one of the big reasons why I didn't choose MIT was because there wasn't such a group in that area, but there was one in Atlanta where it had started. So after thinking it over and knowing that life is a balance, you know, profession can't be everything you want. You need to have that spiritual balance there, or you know, you just will never reach like happiness. You know, that's something I've come to learn across many years. And the retreat was a perfect place, you know, for me to sit down and just speak with God and say, look, you know, this is what's ahead of me. What can I do to help fulfill myself as a whole person, and not just, you know, to help me make more money, or you know, to do something I really love away. And I realized that the best thing for me was to go back to Atlanta and be able to receive that formation that I had been getting throughout so many years that had changed me so much and helped me to become, you know, a better person and helped me to grow. You know, obviously I'm not a saint and I'm not, you know, I'm not a perfect person by no means. But it's knowing that I have that tool there to help me grow
and go down
in that direction, exactly.
Sure.
To take me in the right direction. And that was pretty much the reason why I chose to go to Georgia Tech and not MIT.
That reminds me of something right now that I wanted to read that I think is an example of kind of what you're talking about.
Okay.
This is something in the Pope's book, Crossing the Threshold of Hope. Mm-hmm. And it's him speaking about a friend of his back when he was younger. And the Pope writes, I will never forget a young man, an engineering student in Krakow, who everyone knew and aspired with determination to holiness. This was his plan of life. He knew he had been created for greater things. And at the same time, he had no doubt that his vocation was neither to priesthood nor to religious life. He knew he was called to remain in the secular world. Technical work, the study of engineering, was his passion. And the Pope was complimenting this friend of his who was striving for holiness in his life, but people didn't understand that to be found in someone who wanted to pursue engineering and to pursue the vocation of marriage, which this individual is doing, and you're engaged right now
exactly.
as well.
Exactly.
So this reminds me a lot of you.
Okay.
Is that something that you think the concept of combining and integrating your faith with your professional life, your married life, is something that a lot of people are aware of? And if they are they pursuing that? What do you find?
I think in like the society we live today, I think there's a split. I think there's a lot of people that if you're not a priest, you know, there's a lot of people that do have balance. And I'm not going to say there aren't out there, because there are a lot of people that,
sure.
that you know, that they, you know, I see them and they're, you know, they go to church, they go to daily mass, and they do all these, they pray the rosary all the time. And they're great people, and they understand that you can live the spiritual life, you know, in communion with the church, and you don't have to be a priest, or, you know, or you don't have to be in a monastery somewhere. But I think there's a definite split in the way, I guess, you know, the average, you know, person in society can see that. But I think part of the group I'm in, it's a kind of the way of thinking that you don't have to separate the two things. I think being an engineer, I can dedicate myself, not only just my profession, but all parts of my life, my relationships, my relationship with my future wife. That's all dedicated, you know, towards God and towards our final goal, you know, as, you know, Christians and Catholics, you know, to reach heaven and, you know, to do as much good as we can, live by the golden rule. You can do that as a professional, even as an engineer, a person that's based in science, you know, that looks for facts and reasons and proofs of things. You can still live your life in a way that promotes, you know, becoming a better spiritual person, being more in communion with the church, following, you know, church's guidelines and things like that. Because, well, the way I learned it, the more you learn and the more you're formed, you're going to find out that there really isn't such a break between what the church teaches and, you know, proof and the sciences and things like that. You know, science in general is just basically the way I see it and the way I've learned to see it. Science is just man being able to find out, you know, the things that God has planned, you know, was part of his plan all along.
It complements it,
exactly. We're just finding out about these things. You know, these things have been here, you know. God has infinite wisdom and, you know, his plan is set, you know, as far as the world was, you know, when the world was created and things like that. And we learn about those things as scientists and engineers. And, you know, we're only finding out the patents that are God's patents already, pretty much. You know, we're not the ones, you know, we don't discover things, they're there. And that's why there's a tie to the way, and if to the way the church teaches and science. And if you go in and you know, try to form yourself and study and learn these things, you find out that they're really, you know, reason and faith, they can never collide with each other. They both come from God. And everything that comes from God is good. And, you know, God doesn't lie or give us, you know, any false things. So if reason comes from God and faith comes from God, there can't be any clashing of the two.
There's even a writing from the Pope called Faith and Reason.
Exactly.
He discusses that very concept.
Exactly.
Now, how are you using then something like engineering?
Okay.
Planning to use something like engineering for carrying out what you believe you're intended to do?
Okay, it's funny you mention that because in about a week or two, there's a congress of engineers that are getting together to figure out, not only, you know, they're going to get together to figure out what they can do with their careers as engineers, as an apostolate work, to help people, you know, to do that thing, you know, that Jesus Christ did so well, which is, you know, help people in need, and, you know, and we're trying to do that. And so we're going to get together to find out what we can do. Engineering has many branches, and some of them are very technical. And you say, well, how can you use this very, you know, space age technical type career to help people that are, you know, when people sometimes just need housing, or, you know, or people that just need help on the street or things like that. You know, some people need some very basic things. People just need love sometimes, or just need time, you know, to spend with them. You know, one of the biggest resources that we can give is time. But we're going to get together, and, you know, it's going to be younger engineers, older engineers. A lot of them are very close to the church, so they have this wisdom of years and years of formation. And they're going to bring this all together, and hopefully the young engineers can provide some of the energy to kind of back that up. And we can knock out a way to really help people with our careers. And that's a way to dedicate our careers, you know, to helping others, you know, to the church and helping others.
You're actually having, and this is really interesting, because doing many things at one time. You're taking engineers from all over the country.
That's right.
The profession, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're having different ages, young engineers, more advanced engineers.
Correct.
And you're coming together to see how you can use your profession to do something in the world.
That's right.
So then the young people are bringing energy to the more advanced engineers, and the more advanced engineers are acting, I guess, as mentors.
Right.
And teaching the younger engineers what they know.
Exactly.
And it's a complete complement to one another. And then they're taking their faith and their formation, which if they did not have, they may not be able to come together as well with that focus to be able to use the profession for an apostolic work.
Yeah, the faith and formation is great, because when you have that, you know, you can't give something that you don't have. You know, and even if it's something as simple as helping someone out or being nice to someone, somehow, even if you don't stand up and, you know, and maybe preach to someone, you know, to do this and to do that, and you need to follow, you know, the church's rules and things like that, I think an example is a great way to preach to someone. And you can give that in good, you know, when you're doing apostolate work, if you are that type of person, that will show. And in the way you treat people and the way the project goes and the people that get involved that aren't even part of the project, they're going to notice that, and that's going to kind of rub off on them, or at least have some influence on them. And there is a great way that faith and formation, you know, in a person can be helped without directly, you know, preaching to someone, or it's just the help and the good work, it kind of shines through and people will see that, I think.
You're right now engaged to be married.
Yes.
And you're how old right now?
I'm 25.
And so you're busy. You know, you're talking
about
people who are busy with different things. You know, you're starting off your career and it's demanding in time, and
definitely
you have a lot of other activities that you're engaged in. I want to ask you about that later.
Sure.
But one of the things I know that you've done is you've helped form younger men,
mm-hmm.
you know, a little bit younger than you, on different things. And one of the things you've spoken about is what it means to be a man. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I think that's a very interesting topic, because there's two general, or maybe more than two. I see the big two. There's kind of a split between what society thinks a man should be, you know, or their society's definition. You know, things, and this, how do you know there's a definition? Well, look on TV and look in the movies, and, you know, the way men are portrayed in the movies. I know they're just characters, but in general, sometimes you can kind of see, like, a pattern of what's accepted, you know, what's cool, you know, what a man is, you know. And then there's the other definition, which is, you know, the example we see in Jesus Christ. So we look at the other side of the coin, you know, someone who's selfless, you know, someone who gives, you know, someone who does what it takes to do the right thing, someone who sacrifices himself for one or many, someone who holds the dignity of people, you know, as prime, you know, something huge, sacrifice, you know, unconditional love, things like that. That's the other side of the coin. You know, someone who, you know, looks at a situation, you know, and says, well, okay, there's, you know, there's kind of, you always have a choice at a situation, you know, where there's an event, something happened, you have a choice. and you think through it. Sometimes you feel emotional. Let's say the turn the other cheek type thing, you know. Someone will come to you, insult you, maybe not, you know, physically hit you, but maybe just an insult, a slap, something, somewhere they hurt you. What the typical, you know, the typical thing is, oh, revenge. In the movies, you know, they'll go blow up, you know, the action guy will go and kill everybody and blow up the building and do whatever he has to do, you know. But if you look at the other side of the coin, it's, you know, it's what's the problem with this person? Why would this person have done this to me? You know, let me befriend him, see what's going on with this person, try to really fix what the problem is. The problem isn't that the person attacked me or insulted me. This person has a problem. How can I help this person? The thing is to help and not to just take revenge or be, you know, and that sometimes emotions can kind of take you that way. The person that can really differentiate, you know, and figure out what the right thing is. And Jesus Christ is a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm. One thing that comes to mind is an individual that I know of who was an architect.
Okay.
And he had an architectural firm with a bunch of his partners. And he had moved to another city to build this practice, and they were doing very well.
Okay.
His whole family had relocated there.
Mm-hmm.
But one of these clients that they had gotten soon after he had started was a national strip joint. And that was going to be one of their clients for this firm. And this individual said he couldn't take on this client because it was, you know, against his moral standing, and that he didn't want him as a client. And basically his firm said, if you don't, you're out of here. And not knowing where he had was going to have a job and having to relocate his family, he quit, you know, in order to stand up for what was right and refused to do something that he felt was immoral but was man enough, you know.
Exactly.
And he was looked upon probably as the opposite of a man from his partners, maybe in the eyes of the world, because it was a very large account. So that's an example that comes to mind.
No, that's a great example, because, you know, I guess the definition of a man is sometimes, you know, it's to do the right thing, you know, to head in the right direction, you know, to try to follow the example of Christ. And you say that, you know, what's the easiest thing in that situation? Yeah, it's a big account, we're going to make a lot of money. You know, thinking from the side of, you know, convenience. Oh man, take on the account and make all this money, look good, maybe get a promotion in your company.
And rationalize it. Maybe
you can. Oh, you can rationalize it in a million ways, because there's all these positive, you know, things that you can get out of it. But you're going against the fundamental rule, you know. And the thing is, you know, to do the right thing. And sometimes it's hard, you know. It's not. And the man, you know, the definition of being a man, you know, Jesus Christ, is sometimes you have to do something that's hard, but it's right and you have to do it. And, you know, going the opposite way, I'm sure, was one of the hardest decisions he ever had to make. But, you know, I mean,
that's his faith.
That's his faith, exactly. He went after it, and, you know, I applaud. You know, that'd be something very difficult, to lose your career, you know, to have to go out into the unknown. But it's very difficult, and he did it. And I'm, you know, that's one of the greatest examples I've ever heard of. That's fantastic.
Now, with all the things that we're talking about and hearing about your profession and your spiritual life and now you're engaged to be married, one of the things that I wanted to go into a little bit too are your other social activities. You're involved in a lot of different things and have a lot of support activities in your involvement. Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Okay. One of the things I really like to do in my personal time is I like to dance, specifically salsa, which is a Latin type of dancing, with a partner, and, you know, it's got spins and moves and all this.
Your fiance, I imagine.
Yeah, she likes to dance too. And the negative side to going out and things like that, if you don't go in a group, you go by yourself and you're looking, you know, to maybe meet people. And a club is sometimes a place where, I think I heard it from a friend of mine once, where kind of the sharks hang out, you know. If you're a dolphin and you want to look for a dolphin, well, you know, it makes sense to kind of stay with the dolphins, you know, because you're going to find a dolphin in a group of dolphins. But if you're a dolphin, you jump in with the sharks or the barracudas, you know, you're going to get eventually bitten by a shark or a barracuda.
Dead meat.
Exactly. And that's kind of, that's the negative side of the club. Is that there is that element out there that's negative. You know, there are people doing drugs. You know, some not there on the dance floor usually, but they're out there. There's people that just love to go out and, you know, drink all the time, and that's their whole thing.
And those temptations are there.
They're there.
And the attractions are there.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Like I said, if you go in the right spirit, you go with a group of people that you know, you go with a group of dolphins, you know, you stay within your group, you know, just like the fishes do in the sea, you know, they stay with each other and they, you know. It works out okay, you know.
So no matter what you do in life, you know, whether
everything,
your career,
exactly,
you know, and whether it be with your family and socializing and the other activities that you're involved in, we may not have time to go into.
Yeah.
These are all the things where you're always living to be a man.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's why you need your formation. And even if you're not a priest or a nun, you need to kind of head yourself in that direction, because in everything there's temptation, you know, at work. You know, when you go out to a club, You know, the corner of your, you know, the block on your street, you know, there's something going on sometimes.
In engagement.
Exactly.
You know, most engagement. People are living together.
Exactly. Exactly. A lot of people, I guess, you know, I don't want to say European, whatever,
right.
But I hear stories all
different
the time.
Cultures.
Our
culture.
Europe is just accepted to kind of move in with your fiancé once you're engaged or whatever, or your girlfriend. Some people just start out living together.
Right.
And if you're formed, you know that, you know, sex is probably one of the last things on the list when it comes to, you know, a relationship that's gonna last forever, you know. And that's what, you know, we all know marriage, you know, when it was raised to a sacrament, became something that was not only earthly, but it was heavenly as well. And it's something that lasts forever, you know, till you die. And I think one of the problems you see with a lot of marriages is because that priorities aren't set straight. And it kind of goes back to, you know, God, family, that kind of thing again. You set God first and you follow the right way, you know, you try to avoid, you know, you avoid premarital sex, you avoid trying to live together, which puts you in those kind of situations.
Prepares you for the divorce rather than
exactly,
marriage.
Exactly. Because, I mean, you know, if you put sex first in your relationship, you know, sex can't hold anything together. You know, it's going to fall apart. And that's known. That's fact. You can talk to not just a priest, or you can talk to psychologists, you can talk to plenty of people who will tell you that it doesn't work. You know, relationship is a lot deeper than that. And it's not just, you know, physical. It's not just, you know, it has the spiritual part of it too. It has the religious part of it. And that's, you know, key to bringing the relationship together and having a marriage that lasts 50 years. You know, so when they die and they're crying for each other, you know, 60 years after they were married and they still thank God for having them sent this person to them. You know, that the religious part of that is also makes them different.
And God wants that for us. That's
exactly,
the formula
exactly.
He's given us if we follow, as you put it earlier, guidelines.
Exactly.
You know, on how to live a life, you know, towards Him. You know, He wants us to be happy, and He wants others to see the happiness through us.
Yeah.
So these guidelines are intended to fulfill, you know, what our role is in this life.
And as an engineer, I found, you know, as I go reading and forming myself and learning, you know, my bits and pieces as I go along, it kind of all makes sense. You know, there's a sense where, you know, all the rules, you know, you kind of see the guidelines for marriage and for how to live your life. Really, you know, like the Beatitudes, they're there for happiness. You know, these are things that make you happy, believe it or not. You know, sometimes that's, you know, it contradicts the happiness you see from the social, societal perspective,
right?
But really, these things are there for a reason. You know, they make sense. If you get in and you jump into them, you study them, and you learn why they're there, why these guidelines are there, they're there to help you be happy. That's what they're there for. The thing I want to get across the most is, you know, I have to work like everyone else. Sometimes I'm working 10 hours a day, you know, sometimes I have to drive an hour and a half, you know, after work and do something. The point I want to get across is, you know, it's tough, and, you know, there's ups and downs in your spiritual life, you know, just like, you know, with anything, you know, with any cycle, there's an up and a down in life, but in spiritual life as well. And sometimes you hit a low point, you know, but you have to make the effort, you know, to go to confession, to pray, you know, and get back, and always have the goal that you want to improve yourself, continual improvement in your spiritual life. You know, I know from my own example of my life and the way I felt, you know, along my life and the things I've done wrong and things I've done right. Definitely not a saint. You know, I'm definitely not perfect, and I have fallen. You know, thing is, that's what, you know, confession is there for, that to get back in grace with God. You have to keep learning, continual improvement, because as Catholics, as Christians, you know, we have this ultimate goal. You know, that if you're not a Catholic or Christian, sometimes you don't have that goal. We have the ultimate goal of trying to get to heaven. You know, and that kind of, you want to kind of keep that. In any way you can, try to foster that, you know, that goal.
We'd like to thank you for joining us on Builders of Hope. If you'd like to contact today's guest or myself, email us at our website at buildersofhope.com. We invite you to join us next week when our guest will be Neil Siniscalchi. Neil is very involved in several projects in his community. He holds several board positions and currently serves his community in a political capacity. We'll be talking to Neil about his experience as a public defender working with the disadvantaged sectors of society.